The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Mary Grace, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on. A couple weeks ago, maybe, I listened to an interview you had with Dr. Sean Baker on his podcast, and I thought it was such a great, intriguing story that I reached out to you, and you got right back to me, which is unusual because a lot of people don't get right back to me. But I really enjoyed and found a lot relatable in your story when it comes to nutrition and diet and all these things. So I wanted to have you on so that we could kind of talk about your health journey and what you were doing and what you're doing now. And then, you know, and as a Christian, you know, how different things correlate. And I thought we could talk about that. So maybe if you could kind of introduce yourself and maybe give a brief intro, and then we could start talking about your diet and nutrition.
Sure, thanks. So I'm the owner and founder of MaryGraceMedia.com, and I am the host of The Mary Grace Show. And my show is a variety of topics. I'll give you my tagline so people can know. I'm Mary Grace, the voice of sanity, to help you navigate politics, culture, wellness, faith, and world events. And I do that. I've actually interviewed Dr. Sean Baker on my show. I've interviewed a number of people in the wellness space. I have a functional medicine doctor that I bring on the show pretty regularly for a Q&A. And so this topic has been very important to me for quite some time. I do talk about a lot of other topics, but I'm interested in even from the political standpoint, from the geopolitical, how those things come into play to affect people at the health level, you know, whether it's emotional, spiritual, personal, those types of things, because I'm a big believer in taking personal responsibility. And I think that when people can get a vision for their destiny and they can have the tools to do that, that's part of my role as a podcaster, is to help bring awareness, but also to point people in the direction of the tools that they need to help them take that responsibility.
Yeah, and that's what's kind of made us really big fans of the carnivore diet, is because it's the simplicity of it and the ease of implementation, and then the rather immediate results within 30 to 90 days, to have such dramatic results without the use of pharmaceuticals and all these complex things like macros and all these widgets and watches and devices. It makes it such a simplistic application when you're, you know, and we're a family of eight. So when you have a bunch of kids, the simpler is better. Maybe you could talk about kind of like historically where you were diet-wise and what kind of led you to the carnivore diet.
Sure. I've been all over the map health-wise. I came of age in the late 70s, early 80s. And like a lot of young women, as I got into high school and my body started to change and I had a lot of hormonal swings, I don't think I had a very healthy body image. You know, I look back on the pictures now and I think, what was wrong with me? Like, what was I thinking? I thought I was fat, right? Things like that. And when I got into college, I got into the fat-free movement. I had a friend who was a nutritionist and she told me about, yeah, fat has more calories than carbs, things like that. And it was the dawn, really, I think, of the mainstream emphasis on low fat, fat free eating. And so for the next 20 or so years, I was on that path. And looking back now, I can trace the sharp decline in my health, in my mental health in particular, with the overconsumption of carbohydrates. And I'm talking, you know, grains, refined carbohydrates, so-called health foods that are ultra processed and they happen to have the organic label on them. And we now know also highly processed seed oils, over processed, those types of things. all of the things that we were told were the healthiest for you. Those are the things that I was consuming. And at the same time, I was also doing a lot of damage to my body as a sort of casual endurance athlete, I would say. I was doing a lot of running, swimming, things like that, and sort of pushing my body to the limits and doing it on what I now know is a pretty crappy diet. And then also battling depression and having a constant need for, I guess, dopamine and filling that need with sugars and carbs and ultra processed foods. And I really thought of myself as healthy in that I thought I was making better, I was making good choices when I was eating certain things. And so it's interesting to look back, you know, and think about that. But, and this is why I think for anybody that is exploring and is on a health journey, that it's super important that we don't blame people or guilt them in any way, because I think Americans as a whole and a lot of people in the West have a desire to be healthy, and they have been susceptible to marketing and marketing from all fronts, even the so-called organic healthy front, the plant-based front. It's, as I said, I thought that I was doing the right thing. I really did. And I'm a highly educated person of a good reason and things like that. And so I've learned to have a little more grace for people who are stuck in like a metabolic hell, because they really have been victims of propaganda and marketing on a big level. And they've also been poisoned. And that brings me to carnivore, because I was trying a lot of things. And in the intervening years, I'd say when I started to realize that full carb, fat-free wasn't the right thing, I gravitated more toward the paleo type of thing, kind of low carb, ancestral diet kind of thing. One of the things that really was hard about that was that it was very upsetting to my stomach. So eating a lot of nuts and seeds and things like that that were part of that paleo, is it paleo and then primal kind of diet that Mark Sisson was popularizing. I think a lot of people were thriving on that because it was bringing them out of the ultra processed world. And so there were stages of renewal and recovery for me. But at the same time, I was still having a lot of inflammation. I was still having a lot of gastric issues, skin issues, also still having a lot of anxiety and things like that. And so that was another stage in my journey. And then I had several years of going through a very, very stressful relationship. And at that time, I was diagnosed with a autoimmune condition, Hashimoto's hypothyroid. And anybody who's ever been in that situation can probably relate, because the way that I got diagnosed is that I thought I was going insane. I really did. I was having such extreme mood swings and extreme fatigue to the point where I could have gone to sleep anywhere, including like in the middle of a busy intersection in a city. That's how tired I was. And I wasn't coping with life. And when I got diagnosed, I was put on Synthroid, which is levothyroxine, a T4 supplement, not supplement, it's a Medicaid pharmaceutical. And there was a little bit of a honeymoon period when I was put on that medication where I felt like I could actually live again. I felt like I was getting my life back. And I was also on some nutraceuticals. The doctor that I was working with was also putting me on some nutraceuticals. But the thing that I found with the prescription thyroid medication is that there, for me at least, there was a honeymoon phase. And once that started to wear off, I was kind of spiraling back into a lot of the symptoms that I had had as in a full-blown autoimmune storm, I guess. So, and I'm giving you the long version of the story because I think your audience is going to appreciate it, since you are carnivore and you've done a lot on this journey to bring people along and educate them. So the next thing that happened, went through a divorce, spent a few years, you know, sorting through that. Again, I gravitated at that time toward a plant-based diet, mostly because of what was going on with my gut. Again, because I had been doing what I would call like a modified primal paleo, but it was still not ideal. And when I started on plant-based, it helped. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, again, I was eating really super high quality, very clean plant-based foods. And I think anytime anybody goes from ultra-processed anything to clean, they're going to see some results. But again, the results of that and the feelings that I had kind of wore off, right? And then in 2021? I got COVID. Yeah. I had a bad case of COVID and I was super, super sick. Lost my smell for almost a year. My taste buds were completely messed up. I couldn't even stand the smell of certain foods. Couldn't be around meat, things like that. It was crazy. And I became what I would call like a raging carboholic. That was the only thing that felt or tasted good. And it wasn't like, you know, good, healthy, complex carbs. It was just like whatever I could put in my mouth. And so that contributed to anxiety because I knew that I wasn't eating healthy. And about a year after that, I decided to go to try kind of a ketogenic diet. Family member who was doing it and seeing some good results. So I gravitated toward that, started dropping some of the sugary foods, felt a little more satisfied because I was increasing the fats, but I wasn't losing the weight that I wanted to. I had gained weight eating all those ultra processed carbs after COVID. And I'm not a big person, so if I do gain weight, it shows and I feel it in my body. I've never had what I would call obesity, but everybody sort of knows their set point. I call it my fighting weight, and I wasn't at that, right? And so I was super frustrated, and I ran into a friend who had lost a lot of weight, and I asked her what she was doing. So this is 2022, the fall of 22, a year after COVID, a year after my experience with COVID. And she told me that she had been taking semaglutide, which is also known as Ozempic. So I connected with her doctor and got a prescription, started doing that. And the beautiful thing about it was that it did stop the carb addiction because it just took my appetite away. And, you know, now I know that the effect that it had was that it affected the GLP-1 receptors in the brain, which is very much what happens with the carnivore diet. Except you're getting nutrition in the carnivore diet. With Ozempic, you are not getting nutrition. And the other thing is I didn't have any coaching. I didn't have any nutritional coaching. And so I wasn't eating like I want to be careful what I say because I'm not even convinced that some people might not benefit from a very short time of taking something like that. I'm not a doctor, so this is not medical advice. I've heard some doctors speak about it in such a way that you know, they agree with me on this. But again, everybody has to make their own decision. But what I think would have made a big difference when I took it was to have nutritional counseling and someone to help me transition into a high fat, low carb way of eating. That would have put me in a very, very maybe short window of taking the Ozempic, but then transitioning into high fat, low carb. This is just me thinking out loud. I'm not advocating that anybody do this. I'm just saying that if I could wind the clock back, I would have had nutritional counseling and I wouldn't have lost a bunch of weight and lost my appetite and been nauseous all the time on Ozempic. When I came off of Ozempic, the same thing happened to me that I think happens to a lot of people, is that I had lost a lot of muscle mass and I had also not really addressed the carb cravings. And what happened? I started eating those things again, started reintroducing them, not to the extreme that I had before, but certainly enough that some of the weight started coming back on. And so I kind of was in a yo-yo pattern for that a year and a little bit more. In the springtime of 2024, I heard an interview that Anthony Chaffee did with a woman called Maggie. And she's in her 80s, and she's this beautiful, glowing woman that has been carnivore for like her lifetime. And she was talking about carnivore in such a way that it really made sense. And I had been on this journey. I had been exploring. I had been trying to get my health back. I had a friend who had gone carnivore. She was raving about it. And because of my research into food, I was reluctant to eat a bunch of meat because I was worried about factory farmed meat. I was worried about what would I do if I couldn't get grass-fed, grass-finished beef all the time. I didn't want all those toxins. I didn't want the antibiotics in my body. And when I was listening to Maggie, she explained the ruminant stomach of the cow and how God had designed that stomach to break down all of those harmful substances that were even in the factory farmed meats. And something clicked with me. And I realized I actually have the freedom to go and buy meat at Costco and not have to source a grass-fed, grass-finished half a cow to go carnivore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the very next day, I went carnivore. I was like, this is just what I needed. Like, I needed to hear that. And
yeah.
And I think anybody who's listening right now that has found themselves on a food journey of having that mental conflict of wanting to have clean food, pure food, only organic. I think it's called orthorexic, that you get stuck and you become your own worst enemy because perfect becomes the enemy of good.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. And so thank you, Maggie, if you're listening, because you unlocked the door for me, the little mental prison that I had been in that had prevented me from taking that leap to going and eating a carnivore diet.
Yeah. And there's a very interesting study that the Texas at A&M did regarding glyphosate. And now, according to their study, that cows that graze on grass that's been sprayed with glyphosate, I always say it wrong, glyphosate.
Right, pesticide, that's Roundup.
Yes, Roundup. Yep.
Okay.
It will not pass to the actual meat of the cow, and they've proven that in a study. And I think this is such an important message to everyone because just like you were saying, and psychologically what's interesting too, we're so afraid of not eating the best, so we won't move forward. But at the same time, what we're eating isn't optimal, and we've figured out in our mind how to justify and reconcile that, but we won't make the shift and the change. And I have a very good friend that I hadn't talked to in a really long time, and the Lord just impressed me. This was just like two mornings ago. I was driving into the office, and he was like, you should give Paul a call, you know? So I gave him a call, and it was so incredible because I don't even know the last time I talked to him. It's been 4 or 5 years or whatever. And I had heard something my wife mentioned that he had gotten diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And so I was talking to him, I said, how you doing? He's like, well, I'm doing okay. He just started another round of chemo, and because of this autoimmune thing was spreading. And so I just encouraged him. I'm like, hey, man, you know, you really should just try this carnivore thing. It certainly can't kill you. It's certainly not going to make your entire circumstances worse. And that's what I was encouraging him, is use what you got where you're at. you know, with what's available. I mean, I think that's the action is the key, you know, and as you perform that action, and there's anecdotally, there's been thousands and thousands and thousands of people that are going to places like Walmart and Aldi's, right? And they're buying this meat off of the shelves, just standard plain Jane, and they're having tremendous results. And then, you know, you can continue to improve and tweak and, you know, source stuff and find better sources. And always, I mean, perfect scenario is find a local farmer, right? And then, you know, rate where it is and, you know, what the cow ate and, you know, your farmer and you're keeping your dollars local and all those things. But the first step is to do it, you know, and to start. Yeah. And to not be paralyzed by fear of like, oh yeah, but this is that store-bought stuff. Even though the week before you were in the exact same store and you were on the chip aisle, but you bought the healthy potato chips that were cooked in like coconut oil or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you had justified in your mind why that was good, but if you eat that store-bought beef, you know, it could be bad for you.
Exactly. And that's sort of what that's the kind of orthorexia that I'm talking about. And one of the other things that was a game changer for me was listening to Kelly Hogan, because her story is that she went carnivore on McDonald's hamburger patties. And that was almost exclusively what she ate. And she was very heavy. She lost over, I think, 100 pounds doing that. And she was in uncharted territory because she wasn't jumping into a carnivore community. Her doctor had just told her, if you want to survive past the age of 30, just eat meat. And that was kind of a miracle, but she had no guidance. And so you're right. It's again, you know, sometimes we can be our own worst enemy. And if perfect becomes the enemy of good, then we have lost ground. And that was definitely my case. And so, you know, I started eating a lot of bacon. That was my first thing. And I think a lot of people do that because, especially if you're coming off of carbs, and because it, you know, most bacon has a little bit of sugar. And one thing that I would say to people who are going carnivore is that you can become obsessive about a little trace amount of sugar here, a little this, you know, this kind of additive or whatever. And I'm not saying that those things are good or healthy, but it's like what you said. It's miles ahead of where you were. And so if you've got a bunch of bacon from Costco or Sam's or whatever, and it has sugar as one of the ingredients, it'll be okay. Like, especially if you're just starting, it's on a relative scale, it's fine because you're probably not going to live on bacon. To me, it was a bridge food to get me out of the carb addiction and over into eating more beef and eggs and tallow and things like that. And now I hardly ever eat bacon. It's very interesting. I almost exclusively eat beef and eggs and tallow. And I do like butter. And like one of my little indulgences is that I'll buy special butters. I'll buy European butters. I'll buy hand-rolled artisan butters, things like that. You know, with little sea salt crystals from Normandy coast, things like that. And so, I mean, it's like a little $5 splurge. And so it's very interesting to have that. And sometimes like, you know, special charcuterie, things like that. But for the most part, it's beef. I'll cook a big pot of short ribs or chuck roast, something like that, and then have it on hand for a week. And having a big family, you probably know what I'm talking about. You just, you know, use the Dutch oven or the crock pot, and then you have it ready to go. It certainly has. It's made life a lot simpler. And but if I could, I'll back up a little bit and talk about my experience actually making the change. What I noticed health-wise. Can I do that?
Sure. Yeah, it'd be great.
So March of 20, 24 is when I heard Baggy talking and I decided to go carnivore. It was actually, no, like late February, early March, and a year ago. And so I jumped in, cooked a lot of bacon, got some ribeyes, experimented with different steaks, started adding butter, realized very quickly that if I eat rendered fat, it is not good for my stomach. Like, my stomach can't handle it. I do know that. I get disaster pants. And anybody who's ever done that knows what I'm talking about. So be careful. Don't pour the hot fat, the melted fat on your food. You'll find out once by doing it. But it was, you know, there's experimentation that happens. And what I started to notice was that almost immediately I lost cravings. It was almost like overnight. You know, I didn't want that box of cookies or that bag of chips or any of that kind of thing. And I think from a micro macronutrient standpoint, somebody could explain what was happening, but I'm just saying that the cravings weren't there. And also the other thing that I noticed was that inflammation in my body started to go down. I was pretty energized by it, but also I noticed that anxiety was disappearing. And this was, I didn't realize that I had this underlying current of anxiety that was always there. Even after I had dealt with the depression that I had had in my earlier years, I had gotten through that, but I just didn't know. I didn't know until it was gone as a result of going carnivore. I didn't know that I had had this constant underlying little sidekick called anxiety. And it wasn't until I was driving in traffic up in Northern Virginia that I realized that it was gone. And because somebody pulled out in front of me, and it's not my normal driving habitat. And anybody who goes out in traffic like that, I live in kind of a small town. So navigating in those situations, it can be very anxiety producing. And somebody pulled in front of me and I didn't even care. And then I realized, this is what is happening right here? Like, who are you? And it was that's when it dawned on me, that's my diet. My brain is settling down to the point where I'm not reacting to every little thing. So that was a big deal for me. And the other thing I think I should say, especially to people who are going into this, I think from a health standpoint, not so much from a weight loss standpoint, I did want to lose weight. I really would have liked to have lost weight. But what happened to me is that I put on weight in the first month. And it wasn't just muscle mass. I would like to say that it was. But when your clothes are getting tighter, that's more than muscle gain. And so I put on about 20 pounds. And I was pretty anxious and upset about that because that was the last thing I wanted. But I realized as I did more research and interacted with more people on carnivore that a lot of people in my type of similar situation had a similar experience. And what is that? It's somebody who had done a lot of restrictive eating, a lot of kind of yo-yo dieting, maybe crash dieting, because there was some metabolic damage that I had done to where my body had developed a kind of a set point and it was starving for nutrition, especially after being on Ozempic. And so my body was not even ready to let go of all those nutrients. You know, it was kind of packing on the nutrients and going, okay, finally you're feeding us and we're going to hold on to this and store away this nutrients and this energy for later, because we're not convinced that it's going to stick around based on your pattern of life and the way that you've acted over the last 20 years or so. And so that's the part where I think the mental and emotional component of making a lifestyle change comes in, a way of eating change, is that you have to kind of let go and be willing to let your body do what it's going to do and heal itself, which is what food is supposed to do for you. And that's how I was able to reconcile with gaining the weight during carnivore. And again, I've heard stories of other women, especially, who had done a lot of restrictive and yo-yo eating, especially women who didn't have a ton of weight to lose, actually putting on weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people with massive obesity, you hear these drastic weight loss stories. And the reason that I'm camping out here on this for just a minute is I think people like me who weren't obese sometimes can get disillusioned or very frustrated by going carnivore if they hear story after story after story of people having this extreme weight loss, because in our minds, people like me actually need to lose a lot of weight. So our body image and our mental image of what we need is maybe on par with other people who've struggled and who are coming from obesity. I don't know if I explained that very well, but you know, there is a mental and emotional component to it that is no less intense. It just may be visually different on the scale.
Yeah, I think you described it very well. Another thing that I wanted to point out that is so powerful, and this is the point I always try to make, if you think about it, you know, you mentioned like you were pondering and considering this and you were researching it, right? But then just because of something that Maggie said, right, that was the tipping point. Mm-hmm. That was the one. And that's why talking about this is so powerful, because there's people right now listening to this and they've either been considering it or they tried it and they fell off the wagon, and or they did it and they know it works, but some people just expose themselves back to carbs, and carbs are highly processed food. Mm-hmm. And these things are designed to be ultra addictive, like
yes.
on like the type of level of, you know, all of these opioids and everything else. So, I mean, it's, we all believe in personal responsibility. Obviously, we take personal responsibility. But if you're ingesting these foods, it is chemically designed to be hyper addictive. So in that sense of once you put it in your mouth, it isn't your fault, because they are designing this stuff so that you kind of can't
yeah.
stop. And the beauty of carnivore, the nutrient dense and the society that it brings, it can
mm-hmm.
help you break that addiction. Yeah. But once you break it, you cannot casually smoke crack. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
You either have to break the addiction and keep it broken. There is no casual crack smoker. You can ask Hunter Biden. It doesn't work. And you know,
yeah.
that's why it's so important. This is a tool in the toolbox. And that's what Dr. Baker talks about. He's like,
yeah.
you know, he's like, I'm not saying carnivore for everyone. It's a tool in the toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is what you can use to break your carb addiction, you know, you break that addiction and you keep
mm-hmm.
it broken. You don't imbibe back into that. And now you have some freedom to continue to adjust your food system and your approach and all of that. But I thought that was so powerful that it was just that one little sound bite that you heard from Maggie, who had lived a life of this, you know, type of eating. And just because of that one little blurb that she said, that was just a tipping point. That was enough to push you in the right direction to success.
Yes, yes. And the other thing, too, I think, is that women in particular definitely have a different set of needs metabolically, hormonally than men. Women's bodies go through a lifetime of like hormonal assault. And that's something that I think we have to be aware of. And so, for example, you know, being postmenopausal sets women up. Women who are postmenopausal are in a different place than women who are of childbearing age. And so, you know, if you're listening to someone's story, if you are postmenopausal, be aware of that. Be aware that your body is going to react and respond differently than somebody in their 20s who had a lot of metabolic issues and went carnivore. The healing is there, but also I think it's important to understand that you've lived a lot of years with a lot of assault and damage and a lot of things going on in your body that in many cases were beyond your control, but that it's really important to have grace, to give yourself grace for your body to change and for the healing to happen. Because if you're 50 or 60, it didn't happen yesterday. You didn't get sick just yesterday. The things that happened to you have taken years and years and years. And so that's another thing to keep in mind. And again, I say this just because when people jump into carnivore, they start listening to a lot of podcasts and they're excited and they're drinking from a fire hose and they're wanting to understand and listen. And the stories that get the most clicks and the most get boosted the highest in the algorithm tend to be the extreme transformation stories. And I don't want people to see those and get discouraged if things don't happen that way, that fast for them. And another component of that that I think that comes in too is the faith component. And this is something that you and I had talked about a little bit off air that I brought up when I was on Sean Baker's podcast. I think that there is a mindset in the Christian community that makes it hard for people to go through things like depression or anxiety or even extreme health challenges without guilt. And that actually adds to the problems that you're having a lot of times. What do I mean by that? When I was going through the deepest depression times, it was compounded by the fact that as a Christian, there's this unspoken taboo against having anxiety or depression because, you know, the Bible says, don't be anxious. The Bible says, don't be afraid. And yet, through no fault of your own, most of the time, through some kind of chemical imbalance that we now know is largely influenced by food, we are an emotional and physiological mess. And that just creates a tension and a dissonance that only adds. It's like a snowball effect. And I think that's an issue that's kind of under-addressed in the church. And one of the biggest things that I think needs to change in the church is the culture around food. And we see Christians gathering around the table, which is something that is, you know, a big part of fellowship. And it's critical, right, for community. But the food that's at that table is actually killing people. Mm-hmm. And so this is something, again, it's like an unspoken addiction that is accepted in the church, because as long as it's not alcohol or cigarettes or pornography or marijuana or something like that, it's okay. But the fact is, it's not okay, because it's gluttony. And, you know, I'm speaking some hard truth to people here right now, but there is a point at which people, Christians, have to step up and say, what we're doing is killing us. And if I'm obese and I am putting these foods in my mouth that are contributing to metabolic destruction, and I'm not taking the time to educate myself and to explore other options and to understand that I don't have a blood pressure medication deficiency, I don't have a pharmaceutical deficiency. If people aren't taking responsibility in that area, it's a big problem. And one of the things that we see happening is people are going to church and they're asking for prayer for a lot of sickness that can be reversed by diet and lifestyle. And if you're hearing what I'm saying and you're feeling condemnation, stop right there, because that's not me condemning you. What I'm saying is that we are given tools and we are given the wisdom and the revelation to use those tools. Can God heal people miraculously? He can. But he also gives us resources like this podcast right now to help us open our minds. And that's what revelation is. It's revealing the truth. And so if you are praying for wisdom and revelation, which is right in the book of Ephesians, then and you hear something like this and you ignore it, then you're a foolish person. So I admonish you to take what we're saying and to take it seriously and take it to prayer and ask for help making the changes and implementing the changes that you need to, and courage, because it's not easy to stand up in a crowd and do something different. But you could actually be the person in your congregation that makes the changes that bring life to everyone else around you. You could be the ringleader who's doing that. And maybe that's all it takes, is for you and your spouse and your family to be the ones that lead your church into metabolic health. And that means that you are more effective for the kingdom, that you can do the things that God has called you to do. Because if you're sick, if you're fat and sick and nearly dead, you can't be effective, because you're the one that's always needing help. You're the one that's always in the hospital. You're the one that's always needing prayer. So it's a hard word for some people. Some people are going to get offended right now by what I just said. Mm-hmm. And if you're offended, ask yourself why.
Yeah. And I think it was Jim Rohn. He said most people don't do well because they don't feel well. So if we can, you know, find a solution to our ailments, and if it's, that's what's so fantastic to me. This is so simple. It's as simple. It's almost so reductive that I think it's why it seems so absurd, and it's why you get to, but you don't eat fiber, you know, like what?
Yeah.
What does fiber have to do with anything? You know, because, well, you're only eating meat. I mean, that's how. So what do I do? Like, how do I do this? Just eat meat.
Meat.
You know,
just
eat meat. Well, no, that's way too simple. That couldn't possibly. I mean, there's don't I have to track something, or don't I have to buy something, a bag with like a doctor's name on it to show that it was like approved by like a board of physicians or something like that? And it's so incredibly simple, which is why it works. You know, you're reducing your diet. It's an elimination diet, and you're reducing your diet to the most nutrient dense food. And if you do it properly, it's a self-correcting system, because once you do it to the point where you experience a radical shift in your wellness, in your health, like you were saying with your anxiety, with me, it was brain fog, and I didn't even know I had brain fog until it went away.
Right.
And then I'm like, that's why I couldn't remember stuff. That's why I'd walk into a room and I'd be like, why did I come in here again? And I'm like, dude, I ain't that old. Like, this is weird, you know? And when that goes away, you're like, wow, I had this condition that they've called brain fog, whatever it is. And it's just, you know, a diminished capacity. And now it's gone. You're like, oh, wow, now I remember stuff. I know what I'm doing. I'm more efficient. I can accomplish more. I have more energy. And then, exactly like you were saying, not only will you be able to do more for God, but you will need less people attending to your needs, because now you don't have like 40 different ailments and, you know, and you need everybody to help you do all these things, because now you have the health and energy and acuity and awareness to actually help other people. And it is a beautiful thing. And our culture, the American culture, and definitely the American Christian culture, we are definitely a food culture. We're almost exclusively a fast food culture. I encourage everyone, drive down the road, and, you know, when you start to approach a relatively densely populated area, like the closest town to here is probably like 5,000 people. And when you get to the town, you can start counting the fast food joints, you know, Taco mm-hmm. Bell, Jack in the Box, Sonic, Schlotzky's, and you have this little town, and you'll have 30 fast food joints, and there's always people there, you know, and we become such a society of convenience, and our entire, everything about our society is highly processed, you know. It's not just the highly processed foods. It's like everything needs to be instant. It needs to be microwaved. It needs to be now. And we have, not only have we sacrificed our liberty on the altar of convenience, but we've sacrificed our health on the altar of convenience. And we have to slow down a little bit. And there are very easy steps, like you were saying, with a slow cooker. That's what we do with short ribs, is we'll slow cook them, and then we put them in the fridge, and then you just heat them up in the air fryer, you know, and crisp them up, and the kids can go in there, throw a couple in the air fryer, and it just makes, it makes food prep and food distribution, when, I mean, we have a small army, so it's like, it's, you know, it's like chow hall, and, it makes that so much easier, and then they feel so much better, and it's just this constant, it's like a feedback loop, and it's just, we continue to improve, which is why we want to encourage people, just try it, you know?
Yeah.
And then we want to present stories like yours where there's relatability. Oh yeah, I can relate to that. I can relate to that. And I see that. And then when you say those things that are convicting or troubling to the person, that person can reflect and say, now, wait a minute. Like, up until that point, like up until she said that, I was right there. Right.
Yeah,
and I was agreeing with her. And I was, you know, I found all these common points and all these similarities, but now I'm offended. And there's been many times, I think, for all of us, like we've heard something that was true and we got offended and we just kind of tossed it away.
Yeah.
And then weeks down the road or whatever, why, I remember when she said that, and when she said that, it made me really mad. But you know what? She was probably right, you know?
That's really key too, because there are going to be people who already have tuned out. They haven't gotten this far because they got upset by what I just said. But, you know, we can, I'm going to trust God to bring that message back around to them in whatever way they need to hear it. Because that's what happened to me. You know, I was not really willing. And then I heard that one interview that Maggie did. And so that will happen. One of the things too that I was thinking about is that, a couple things. One is that when we look around our society right now, it's easy to think that your situation is just normal, that because we have become so sick as a society, because everybody around us is inflamed and fat and wearing plus size stretchy clothes and living in leggings, that's normal. What I want to say about that is that it's common, but it's not normal. And this is the key, because God's best for you is not normal. It's superior. And He designed your body and created your body to move and to be at optimal health. And so if you are one of the crowd and you're looking around and you're thinking, oh, it's not so bad, you know, I'm only 50 pounds overweight, that person's 100 pounds overweight, that's not normal. It's not the way that you were created and designed to be. And there is a way out. If you are racked with guilt because you've been trying all kinds of things, which I think a lot of people do, if you've been trying all kinds of things and you've had the wrong tools, there's no reason to feel guilty. It's sort of like saying that you've been trying to get a bolt off with a hammer, and what you needed all this time was a socket wrench. And so, you know, carnivore is that socket wrench. It could be for you. If you've been eating so-called healthy or organic and you've been in pursuit of all of these things, if you've been in the gym and you've been doing crazy cardio and you still can't lose the weight and you've been doing plant-based. I mean, I had a family member reach out to me just yesterday, been doing plant-based for years, and said, I've got to do something different. This is not working. I am, you know, going to be X age soon, and I am not happy with where I am. And, you know, I had mentioned this to this family member a year ago, and it was a flat no. And then they came around and said, I want to do some research. They're not ready yet, but I want to do the research. And I can tell you for certain that this person has tried so many things, and I know they feel guilty. And I think a lot of people are in that position where they really felt like I was. I believed I was doing the right thing. I really did. So don't let that stop you. The other thing I wanted to add to this is your doctor, unless they're a naturopath, unless they are functional medicine based, they have had zero training in nutrition. And so while on the one hand, it is important for you to talk to them about if you're on prescriptions, again, this is not medical advice, but if you are going to make a change, definitely let them know if you're on a bunch of prescriptions. Just say maybe, hey, I'm going to try something different. I want to get a baseline and check in with you just in case my levels change and I need to back off or change prescriptions. I think that's a good way to approach it. I wouldn't get into a big argument about eating a bunch of meat. I would just say, I want a baseline. I want to make some changes. I want to just keep it simple. I want to cut out some sugar in my diet, because you're going to trigger them if you say, I'm going to start eating only meat. But it is critical that you get that baseline, I think, if you're on a bunch of medications. But the other thing I was going to say is that people in this country have gotten conditioned to making medical decisions based on what the insurance pays for. And and that, I think, has contributed greatly to our downfall in our health. All of these prescriptions that the doctor is writing, I don't have to pay anything. I go to the pharmacy and I can pick them up and it's zero copay. Well, is that really what you want as your criteria for a life-altering medical decision? That it was a zero copay? You're paying. You're just paying with your health and with your potentially with your life and, with your children's future. Is that the price you want to pay?
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that about the conditioning with this health insurance or whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's what they call it, health insurance. But we have a very good friend, an older gentleman, who is incredibly wealthy and incredibly active. He's in his 80s, and he was doing some work at his ranch, and he pulled on a T-post, and he ripped his bicep. And what was fascinating is he's been trying to get a doctor to look at it. And they've been telling him, oh, well, we have to call your insurance and all these different things and see what they'll approve. And I'm like, this is so bizarre, because this man is very capable. You know, we do medical sharing, so we're real familiar with the whole process. I'm like, this man is more than capable of going to an orthopedic surgeon, getting this diagnosed and operated on and fixed and paying out of pocket. And it would probably wouldn't even be more than $4,000 or $5,000.
Yeah.
And he wants to get it fixed, but everybody's waiting to hear what his insurance will say. And I'm like, that's crazy, man.
And he's been paying for the insurance. It's not free.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. They have so much control. And these insurance companies are practicing medicine without a license. Most of the time when this is presented to the insurance company, you have somebody who's making an hourly wage or a salary that is not trained in medicine, and they're not your doctor, and yet they're weighing in on medical decisions that could have a profound influence on whether you live or die. That's the craziest thing to me. But I wanted to put that out there, because it's obvious that I hear this all the time. People, getting certain shots and things because, I went to the pharmacy and it was free. And that's how they advertise it, right? I used to tell my parents, who are elderly, my mom has since passed, but my dad, all the time, when you show up at the grocery store in the fall, when they start pushing all of the, quote, free shots, this is not free. They're going to bill your insurance and it's not necessary. You don't have a deficit of whatever is in that shot. It's not something that you need. What you need is fresh air, vitamin D, vitamin C, good food, water, minerals. That's what you need, and a clear mind. So it's very interesting, though, because our society has been conditioned, just like when the jibber jabbers came out, for the cold that everybody had. It was, they're free. They still do it. Do you want this? It's free. Like, no, it's not. It's somebody paid for it, and you're paying for it with your health.
Yeah. They say when the product's free, you're the product.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just, we're in interesting times, but I think that it's a good time to be alive. And one of the things too that comes to mind when I think about Christians and I think about the way of eating that we have, you think about what's available to us, and it's always been the thing that has sustained life has always been meat and fat, the expression, the fat of the land, right? the expression is not like the kale of the land, right? Or the tofu of the land. Like it's, mm-hmm. that's not it. It's the fat of the land, because that is what feeds us, you know? So I just think it's very interesting, you know? And speaking of fat, you know, going back to Maggie, the way that I found her was that somebody put a picture up on, I think it was on Twitter, and it was a photo with, it was with her, she was in the photo, and somebody commented and said, look at her skin. That is obviously tallow skin. And I was like, you know, because I'm really into, like, you know, I love skincare. And so, you know, that's what piqued my interest. And so I said, what do you mean? What's tallow skin? Beef tallow. That's probably all she puts on her skin. And so I was super intrigued, right? I'm like, what? And so that led to the rabbit trail of me tracking down Maggie. Just going to be honest.
Wow.
It was her skin.
That's funny.
And it was that one comment that somebody made about tallow skin. Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned tallow skin, because mm-hmm. my son and his wife, he's recently married, and they're getting ready to launch like a tallow skincare line. So they've been, yeah, because we raise our own cows and we do sell our beef locally. So, and she's pretty industrious. So they've been kind of brainstorming, and they're planning it probably within the next 30 to 60 days, it should launch.
Ooh, so I want to try it.
On our website.
They can use me as a guinea pig.
Yeah, we'll send you some samples. That'd be cool.
Are they going to use, okay, this brings me to my next question for you is, have you done any research or tried methylene blue? Are you familiar with that?
I don't want to say I'm very familiar with it. I'm familiar with it.
Okay.
And, you know, I've heard about all the good things about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know Paul Saladino did I don't know if it was a whole podcast on it. He didn't have all of the glowing recommendations on it. So I know it's kind of a split jury, but I am familiar with it. I think at one point in time, it was a fabric dye or something like that.
It is. And it is a fabric dye. Yeah. Still.
Yes. So I'm still, I'm very curious about it.
I've just started down that little rabbit hole. The reason that it came to mind is that there are some tallow skincare products that are also incorporating methylene blue.
Wow. Okay.
So because apparently the combination of methylene blue and red light therapy is like a skincare miracle.
Huh. Very interesting.
Yeah, I know. And of course, you know, red light therapy is also known as sunlight. So if you're in a climate, we're in the Northern Hemisphere, we're in Virginia. So this is not the time to get red light therapy naturally. But I was, you know, I've always been a sun person. For a long time, I've been of the mindset that I think sunscreen was one of the big problems that contributed to disease. And some people say on carnivore that you don't get sunburned, really. And that's been kind of my experience.
Yeah, I have not going carnivore over a year. And we're in Texas, and it's 85 today. And we have a farm. And I sell construction, so all week I'm outside in the sun. And all Friday and Saturday, I'm outside all day. And in a year and a half, I have not gotten sunburned, and we went on a cruise, and I haven't used sunscreen in a couple years, and you do not sunburn. As long as you're not introducing sugar into your diet, you won't sunburn.
Right. And I think the seed oils have to do with that as
mm-hmm.
well, right?
Yeah.
So people who go off of seed oils and people who are on a carnivore diet, avoiding sugar, they don't get sunburned. Now, some people take that, I think, before they fully detoxed and they do get sunburned. But so I think everybody's different. But obviously, I'm very fair. And, you know, I didn't get sunburned last year. And I spend time outside, you know, in the direct sunlight. So it's very interesting. So I'm intrigued to try the tallow/methylene blue combo. I may just kind of do that and report back to everybody. 'Cause
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, because I'll be 60 in March. And, you know, I definitely, you know, I have the fine lines and the wrinkles and all that stuff. So I think I'm a good candidate for it. And I probably did some sun damage, you know, especially eating the fat-free diet that I did.
Sure.
And the seed oils and things like that. But, you know, talk to your family and see if they might incorporate that. It'd be interesting.
Yeah,
especially
we'll check
in that Texas.
Out.
Like, you guys can already, you can start your experimentation today.
Yeah.
It's only 35 degrees here, so we're not ready.
Right.
But in a few months we can. So, yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? The things that are available that have been suppressed, including this way of eating.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
The, you know, look what they're trying to do to the eggs.
Yeah.
Trying to get people, they couldn't convince just when everybody starts to realize that cholesterol isn't the enemy, they decide, well, we're just going to kill the chickens. We're not going to let them eat eggs.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, oh my goodness. It's like a little bit of an uphill climb, but I think this movement, I think it's a winning proposition, and the truth always wins. So
yeah,
it's just,
yeah,
a
and we're
going to
be speaking. We're having a carnivore meetup in Austin, Cedar Park, on March 8th. It's for Carrie Mann's documentary, Healing Humanity. And so there's going to be a meetup down there. I'll put the link in the show notes to that. And this has been like an awesome conversation, Mary Grace. Why don't you let everyone know, you know, where's the best place to find you and your information?
Sure. Thanks. My website, marygracemedia.com, is the easiest place to find all of my links. I'm active on a number of social media platforms, most active on Facebook and on X. My X is at Mary Grace TV. My Facebook is Mary Grace Media. Both of those accounts are verified. If you find fake accounts, ignore them. marygracemedia.com. And I'm looking forward to seeing this interview. Thank you so much for having me.
Been another great conversation, and I hope you all have a blessed day.